Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been the leader in waterfowl conservation, with over 16 million acres of habitat conserved. DU supporters and volunteers have led the charge to fill the skies with waterfowl, today, tomorrow, and forever. You too can play a role in leaving a legacy for the future of waterfowl hunting. To find an event near you or to join our volunteer team, go to www.ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Hello and welcome to the Standard Sportsman Podcast, where your hosts Brent Birch and Kaysen Short will discuss, debate, and detail trending topics within the sport of duck and goose hunting. Brent and Kaysen have over 80 years combined chasing ducks in Arkansas with a like-minded pursuit of leaving waterfowling better than they found it. Each week, you will hear impactful interviews and engaging guests guaranteed to make you a more informed and effective hunter conservationist. Thanks for spending time with us today. Now, let us jump into today's show with the guys.
Here we are back again with another episode of the Standard Sportsman. It's Brent Birch along with co-host Kaysen Short, and we are standing on the doorstep of the 2023-2024 duck season here in Arkansas, and we're pretty excited about it. This is something Kaysen and I both work on probably, I'd say, I feel confident saying year-round. And I'm not talking about daydreaming about it. I'm talking about working at it. And now's where you get to the point where all this hard work kind of comes together, and you have the fun and the chase and everything that gets us so excited about duck season. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And Kaysen, I know you are too.
Yeah, feels like it's been a long time getting here. You know, we start, gee whiz, it's week after duck season. We'll start in February. We're moving water, making plans. It never, ever stops. So the buildup is pretty intense. But I was telling someone the other day, I don't know if we were talking about whitetail hunting or what, but, you know, if it's something about the work involved, that building something, creating something that kind of makes those rewards that much more special. So I don't know, maybe my personality is weird, but if I can't build it or create it, it's not as much fun to me. So there's a long build up to the year, but it's what makes it so enjoyable on the backside.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. I feel like, you know, getting your hands in the dirt a little bit and, you know, being active in some of the things that make the ducks want to be there, the geese want to be there, and make the hide good, and all those things. I feel like having a role in that makes the satisfaction just exponentially higher for myself as well. So, and some people aren't that way, and that's perfectly fine too. Some people prefer to just show up and hunt them, and then when hunting season's over, they flip the switch to something else, and that's why it takes all kinds and pretty much everything somebody could do. But you know, it's for waterfowling, for me, I'm definitely a hands-on, want to participate, because I get something out of that, and I get a huge reward out of it when I see, and that doesn't even equate to shooting ducks. You know, we talked about in an earlier podcast when Lee was on. Lee and I were spec hunting at my farm, but we were in eyesight of a little zero grade field that we have that we had just put water on, and you know, we'll watch ducks pour in there while we're goose hunting across a dry field from it. You know, he caught out of his, you know, vision that I had a little smile on my face and even asked me why, and he already knew the answer. And I said, man, it's all the hard work that went into getting that field prep for those ducks, and to see them pour in there like that, you know, brings a smile to your face and makes all that hard work worth the effort. The Standard Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors.
I've always been a fan of Yeti coolers and their drinkware. Now they've come out with a Loadout 30 Go Box. Brent, did you know they're also making those in a 15 and a 60 now?
I did. I've been a big fan of the 30. I actually carry around our mobile podcast gear in one, and then I've got another one that I use during duck season that I don't have to worry about any of my gear getting wet or dusty and dry when it hadn't rained in a while. It's an amazing product.
Yeah, so I use them a bunch. Same deal. I've got a 30 that stays in the boat, carry camera gear and all sorts of equipment in it. And it's nice to know that clients, dogs, you know, nothing's going to get it wet, going to tear it up. But the 15 has really found a spot in my arsenal as well. I switch from hunting with clients to hunting with my kids pretty frequently. And it's great to use that 15 as an ammo box. So I've got all the kids' ammo, gauge reducers, hand warmers, whatever they're going to need in one box. And all I've got to do is grab it and I'm ready to take them out in the woods.
Yeah, the Yeti Go box is definitely the way to go and keeping organized, accessible, and protected. And it's no matter what size you pick, it's a must have for waterfowl season. Tom Beckby started in 2015 with the simple goal of making classic sporting apparel for sportsmen. Since introducing their flagship Tensaw jacket 8 years ago, they've carried that goal forward with a full range of classic wax cotton jackets, canvas and leather bags, and field gear for waterfowlers and upland hunters. You can shop for their full collection at tombetby.com, in their Birmingham, Alabama, and Wilson, Arkansas stores, and at over 150 retailers across the United States. Backed by a lifetime guarantee, find out for yourself the difference between quality over quantity.
Yeah, that's, I mean, definitely what lights our fire. And I'll give some props here to our public land friends. Man, getting up at 2 a.m. and putting in those hours and that work. You know, I know that their rewards come the same way. Seeing birds come into a hole when they've done their homework and they've scouted and they've got up, you know, and burnt those early morning hours like that. So I think that's what drives a lot of us. And everybody's a little bit different. And that's what makes our sport really special.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, this episode, you know, we haven't done one in a while with just Kason and myself. So we thought, you know, going into the Arkansas opener, we'd go a little bit, you know, kind of what it means to us and you know, maybe some stories of past opening days and things like that. And then, you know, we've talked offline about a few goals we want to get out of this season. So we'll talk about a few of those things and then we'll kind of wrap it up, I think, with a little, you know, an outlook of what we're seeing, because we're in two different parts of the state and pretty two drastically different. Like, I don't think we share ducks flyway wise within the state. I think ducks would have to take a pretty crooked path to be between the two of us. So we may talk about what we're seeing in each of our parts of the world and folks that are listening can apply it to where they hunt and see what adds up. And I've even talked to a few people out of state that seasons have already opened and share a little bit of that stuff. So that's kind of our plan for today. And I think it'll be a fun episode for the listeners.
Yeah, man, I'll tee one off here. I hope not everyone has a friend like this, but I have a feeling or a suspicion that most of y'all do. I've got a good college friend that decided he wanted to get married on the opening weekend of duck season 1 year.
Oh, no.
And if he's listening, he definitely knows who he is now. But despite all the logistical efforts, it finally came down to it. I was like, man, I'm not coming to your wedding. Like, you really should have thought that through better. And then not just for planning. Duck hunting. Oh, terrible, terrible, terrible planning. I mean, he's from Tennessee, went to college in Mississippi. So on that weekend, you've got deer opener. You've got opening weekends of, you know, varying degrees across all those states. And I was like, no, man, we're friends, but we're clearly not that kind of friend.
No, you got to be blood relative, I think, to skip the opening weekend of duck season for a wedding.
And even then, like, if you're a blood relative and you still make that choice, might have cut ties there too.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, I don't have a lot of, you know, specific memories of opening days that tie to, you know, to an event like that, but you know, I definitely have experienced opening days all over the board. I mean, this is 47 years of doing this. And I don't know that I went opening days when I was a little kid. I mean, I know I started hunting when I was 6 years old, but, you know, a lot of opening days under the belt and hunted in 80 degree weather, 70 degree weather, freezing cold, everything's frozen opening weekend, you know, all over the board. Have ducks, don't have ducks, have water, don't have water, have way too much water. You know, the opening weekend is truly all over the board as to what it could or could not be. Now you can map out, at least for my perspective and my hunting experience, there are consistencies in when the ducks show up, you know, and season kind of takes a true uptick in those windows. Those are somewhat predictable. Opening weekend is truly completely unpredictable based on my experience. Cause, you know, a lot of things have to kind of line up right to make it happen. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this because I think we should be starting the season later and all that. I'm a before Thanksgiving weekend, before Thanksgiving guy. I think that's the best time to start it. I think the season needs to be open for Stuttgart's benefit and that festival. I think it's great because kids are out of school and maximizing that. So I'm not saying this that, you know, opening weekend can be all over the board. So we need to back the dates up. I think where we have them is where they should be as far as an opener go. But man, it's been all over the board for us, just depending on everything lining up right. But what it is to me, I think that first weekend is a chance to figure out whether all your stuff works, you know, whether you got, you know, you can show up, roll out to some pit. And if you haven't been out there and maybe the roll top got bent by the tractor during, you know, harvest or, you know, crazy stuff like that. You always find something. Your buggy doesn't run right. Your boat doesn't run right. Despite test running it prior to the season, always seems like those kind of goofy things happen that opening week of duck season. So you're able to get those out of the way while the duck hunting may or may not be what you want.
Yeah. We fall much more on the consistency side, you know, in that early season like this. Typically, we do really well. It's very consistent. Now the weather is always pretty erratic. We've had ice, we've had 80 degree weekends, you know. I feel like a pretty good job of catching those photo period migrators, you know, those Halloween ducks that everyone talks about. So it's a real consistent thing for us, despite some years, you know, 4 or 5 days out, you're thinking, man, where are these birds? But typically they show. The last few years have been a little bit different. That's a little different trend. We probably won't get down that rabbit hole today, but I don't know, after 35 plus years hunting opening weekends, it's just kind of a ritual, rite of passing. You know, it's almost like the last weekend of the season. I'll say last weekend. Now sometimes we end on a Tuesday. That's pretty anticlimactic, but
no,
won't get into that either.
Nope.
But it's, you know, it's everything that we've looked forward to the entire year, and it's right here on us. Some friends of ours to the north opened here recently, you know, so they've got to experience it. And they all run together, because there's definitely some hunts that stand out. You know, there's a lot of memories over the years, but it's just I think it's more the culmination of all of it. Just the excitement, man. Still to this day, I'm going to lay down Friday night and try to go to sleep, and we'll have trouble going to sleep, and I'll probably wake up before my alarm. It's just ready to go, ready to get started. And I think that would be the same no matter when they set the opening weekend. I'll touch on that too. If anything, I'd rather see it open a little bit earlier. And some of that is not just for the private land side. I think the January run is a little intense. I think maybe we should change some of that pressure. But again, that's another conversation. But yeah, what a great week to start as we are. You know, my kids are out the entire week of Thanksgiving. It's a great opportunity to take kids. It's just, weather's pretty mild. It's a great time of the year. Maybe my favorite time of the year. It's the opener, and you know, it just all builds to that point, and we're ready to kick it off.
Exactly. And that build up is, it does create an incredible amount of excitement. I was digging through some stuff the other day, and I knew I had this in my collection of things. And I'm a collector of a lot of duck hunting things. I've got old duck calls. I've got old magazines. I've got old photo. I mean, I got piles of stuff. But what I have, and my mom saved it, which is pretty cool. And I'll share it, and we'll put it on social media because it's kind of hilarious to read. But I made a checklist when I was 11 years old. That's on a piece of notebook paper. You know, you know, you tear a notebook piece of notebook paper that's got those little scraggly side to it.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I'm left-handed, so it means, you know, you're writing over the coil on the notebook. So my handwriting, it's obvious I tried to be very meticulous, and because left-handed people have crappy handwriting anyway, but it's all in cursive. So it's this very ornate writing, and it is my checklist for the 1981 duck season. So I would have been 11 years old, and it was pretty descriptive. I mean, I wrote down like camouflage hat, and I had in parentheses Jones style.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, and I said, and I think I had on their license, and it said, don't eat until I'm 16. You know? So I had all these meticulous little notes, but I won't spoil it because it's better to read it and see it and read it. But I kind of scrambled the other night because I asked my wife, Molly, I was like, where? I know we have that, but where is it? And all my various piles of things around the house.
Yeah.
And I found it in a drawer inside of a Ziploc with all of my band certificates, because I don't, I have all my band certificates framed, but I reprint them because, you know, now you print them yourself. So right. Back in the old days, they mailed you one, and you know, they were kind of small. I have all those original ones in the same Ziploc with this note, but I found it because I've framed all my band's certificates, and I print, they've all been reproduced to be 8.5 by 11, so they fit with the modern day ones. But I guess I determined that was a good place to keep it. But I found it after searching about 4 or 5 other places that I thought it would be. So big relief that this preseason checklist from 1981 is still in my possession. But it's pretty hilarious to go back and look and read, but it was, I think I signed off on it. I signed my name, you know, try to be fancy cursive. And I think it says tall blonde. Cause I had blonde hair when I was younger, tall blonde duck hunting lover. Is what the I signed off as.
We might have to change your screen name on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's cool. It's so cool. My mom kept that. And then I still have it
for sure. Yeah.
Pretty neat little thing. So Molly's going to frame it now, get it out of a Ziploc in the bottom of a drawer with some other junk and put it up in the house, or either in the house or at duck camp. One of the two.
You know, I think that's one of my favorite things about duck hunting. Here we are telling a story that's pretty awesome. I can't wait to see the picture of that. But it's not even about a hunt. You know, it's a memory from something outside of an actual hunt. And that's, I don't know, that's something I guess I preach to people all the time, or we try to provide here, you know, at the lodge, is it's the experience, you know. And obviously good hunts lead to better experiences. There's no question about that. But most of my, as we sit down and try to tell, you know, this, I've had this episode, and we want to tell stories from opening weekends. Like, man, most of my stories are back in the lodge. I mean, I know some really good hunts that we had, but I mean, that's not gonna be very entertaining. I mean, to tell you, we killed X number of ducks in X number of minutes, like whatever, you know, but
yeah,
but that story, man, that's awesome. And just the anticipation, I think you just described probably every little boy across the country, you know, before the night before the opening day, just full of excitement. And I still get that way, you know. It's still,
oh, for sure.
Still, I'm fired up talking about it. And here it is, what, Tuesday? We'll release this episode on Thursday. So, still, I got the checklist is different now, you know. Got to clean the boat, put the benches back in the trucks, got to do some stuff in the lodge. I mean, it's a different list, but it's still exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's what I've heard John Stevens say this, John Stevens of R&T Calls say this numerous times, is all this going around. And I'm not saying that deer hunting doesn't have it and turkey hunting doesn't have it, but you combine the, you know, the traditions of waterfowling and the history and the capturing of all this history. I mean, y'all have it. You got piles and piles of black and white photos that are truly epic. You know, I've had the good fortune to write a book on the history of, so you have this, you know, there's not a lot of books in Arkansas about the history of deer hunting or the history of turkey hunting or the history of bass fishing. There's a lot of stuff about the history of waterfowling. And that's what I think all that adds up into this anticipation of the season starting, because you know where those memories are and were, and you pull yourself back together in the places and the people that created those memories, and then the anticipation of what are we going to do next? What's going to happen next that we're going to be talking about in 20 years or 30 or 40 years, which is pretty cool. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, we'll talk about outlook in a little bit. You know, my expectations for opening weekend are pretty, typically pretty low. I just like getting it going. But getting it going, I hate capital HATE, how fast it goes by. we've talked about on past shows that this need to cut back to 45 days or even 30 days, which, you know, I experienced it. We had 30 day seasons when I was in college. That goes by incredibly fast.
I mean,
a blur.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be real clear about this. I do not want to go back. I hear a lot of people say, oh, we need to do this, we need to do that. And I understand where they're at, I understand the thought process, and I'm not berating those people, but you can burn up a 30-day season in 4 weekends. And that is not enough opportunity for me.
No.
I mean, if that's what we have to do, look, I'm all for the resource. We'll do what needs to be done, but it's not, I would rather try to conserve in other areas before we give up days in the field, because you just can't replace days in the field.
No. And you know, we've advocated, or not advocated, but we've talked about this in the past, the benefit of the 60-day window. For example, we're going to start this season with 70-degree weather. We're going to have 70-degree weather again in January. It's inevitable. It always happens. You toss in the full moon. So you're really taking 60 days and you're condensing them down based on certain factors. You need hunting to be, you know, a decent prospect of being successful.
Yeah.
You're condensing it down already.
Right. You're going to throw a bunch of those days away.
That's right. I mean, they're not going to be productive. Now you can go and you can still have a good time and you can eat well and sit around the camp, do all that. But most of us do this because we do like to shoot them too. That's part of the experience. It's not the only reason, but it's a reason. And so you start condensing down your days successful. Well, you take a 45 day or a 30 day season, and then you're only looking, like, you can count them on one hand in a 30 day season that you're probably gonna have optimal weather days, regardless of when you put it. When you know, you got the January advocates, you got the more days in December advocates, you got whatever. There's going to be days in there that aren't huntable. And the 60 days, you know, at least gives you a chance to have the most opportunistic weather, moon, availability. Not everybody has the availability to take off work and hunt. So, you squeeze that into a 30-day deal like it was when we were kids, man. It's like, whoa. That goes by in a blur.
It sure does.
But 60 does too. I mean, it's crazy how fast duck season goes, to me at least.
Yeah. There's times, you know, we hit these long 20 some odd 30 day stretches. You know, there's times it kind of drags out, and we try really hard here to schedule our hunts and have some days off in between to kind of reduce that pressure. We take it upon ourselves to reduce gun pressure that way. So we kind of, I guess, limit our days in the field as well. We do it voluntarily, or how we schedule things, but it can still, there's times it can kind of drag out. You get, it's El Nino year like this. There's going to be a period in around Christmas where the weather is stale and the ducks are stale, and it's just tough, you know, but blink your eye and you're going to be staring at January 30th thinking, oh crap, where did it go? And I guess maybe that would be my challenge to everybody this year. You know, you and I kind of set out to tell some stories, so I'll tell this one real quick, but I want to challenge everyone to get out and make memories. This will be my 14th year that I won't be able to hunt with my father. And I don't remember a lot of details from our last opening day together. At the time, I obviously did not realize how sick he was, probably in denial. But I remember the effort, you know, that it took for him to get in and out of the blind. I remember looking back, you know, at how uncomfortable he was. Didn't see it at the time, but I got to spend that last, you know, that last year hunting with him and didn't know it, had no idea, you know, but it means a lot to me now looking back, even 14 years later. I know Saturday morning we're headed back in. The first thing I'm going to want to do is pick up my phone and call him and tell him how the hunt went, you know, and I can't do that anymore. So, man, get out there with your friends, your family, go make some memories and enjoy duck hunting, because that's what makes all of us passionate about what we do. It's sharing it with other people.
That's a great point, and it definitely should look at that way, especially when you're being able to hunt with family. But, you know, a lot of us hunt with really close friends too, and just being able to maximize those days, because you never know, you know, when you get thrown a curveball and something changes in that regard. So that's great advice and great way to look at it, because, you know, there's definitely a grouping that, I don't know, kind of sour from the opening day until the season's over. And I'm not sure where the enjoyment is found for some folks in this sport, but
yeah.
You know, there's a different way to look at all this and enjoy the time spent. I mean, I know for me, and I know that I know this for a fact, my dad, he doesn't listen to podcasts and all that. And we've hunted I don't know how many times, a lot, to the point where, you know, now that I'm hunting a different farm, because I bought into a farm that's about 20, 25 minutes away from where he's hunted for 40 years and where I grew up hunting. You know, we don't hunt as much together as maybe we did all the past, because in the past it was every hunt, hunted together. So that dynamic has changed, but I'm making a concerted effort this year to hunt together more, whether that requires me to get in the truck and drive 20, 25 minutes up the road, you know, up the highway to hunt at his place or have him more frequently down to mine, which we've done. And we've already got off to a good start with early spec season. We hunted together several times at his place because they were holding a lot of birds and we weren't. We were still trying to finish up harvest. So that's a great point you make. And I hope people are able to take advantage of that this season and kind of have that outlook, because we all know it. The hunting is going to ebb and flow to the point where I'll get a little frustrated with it and what's going on, but you can still find a way to enjoy it. And you got to look for those bright spots, because unless you're just a total curmudgeon, that's not going to be happy unless it's we're killing piles of ducks every single day. Then, I mean, you're going to end up pretty sad a lot of times. So,
yeah.
I've definitely transitioned to that point. And I don't get me wrong. I love the days when we get after them good and try to have way more days than that than not. But I'm also realistic that it just doesn't work that way and never will, never has, never will. The Standard Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors. From the people who brought you the first motion goose decoy in 1994 comes the first motion silhouette decoy. Once again, Higdon Outdoors has changed the game.
I got a chance to get my hands on some of these the other day, and I was blown away. When I first heard they were in the works, I was a little skeptical. I didn't really see how you could have all the benefits of a silhouette, like lightweight decoys, the space savings, the ease of setup, and not lose something with adding a motion system. But as soon as I put the first stake in the ground, I knew they got it right. These rigs have amazing motion in the lightest breeze, and they sacrifice nothing. I've been chasing specs for over 3 decades, back when a spec call was even hard to find. It's amazing how far we've come in spec hunting, and Higdon Outdoors continues to pave the way. Revolutionary footwear from Light Boots, the lightest waterproof boot ever made. Your first hands-on feed-in introduction to Light Boots is a jaw-dropping experience. With a pair of men's 11s weighing in at less than 26 ounces, Light Boots are the benchmark in ultra-lightweight toughness, next-generation comfort, and ease of use. Whether you're all-weather hunting and fishing, farm and ranching, or home and gardening, Light Boots are guaranteed game changers. Now available in youth sizes. Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess on that note, let's talk about expectations. I'll kind of, you know, we know the weather pattern that we're in for this year. You know, you see one forecast is going to tell you that it's going to be colder. The other one says it's going to be mild with more water. You know, I listened to our friends at DU, had a guy on the other day that was kind of talking about weather patterns. And I tend to kind of align with him. I think we're going to be above average temperature, you know, into January. I think we're going to get some kind of wild cold swings like we saw there during the early spec season. You know, we had a really hard cold front come through and then boom, we got back to 80 degrees. So I think we'll see a couple fronts like that, you know, maybe through Christmas or right after. I'm not sure on the precipitation side. I kind of think we'll go through some rain here in the next week or two, and then we'll probably see a little bit of a dry spell after that. So it could be January before we start to see big rainfall. But I think weather-wise, it's going to be mild and kind of stagnant through much of the central U.S. Extreme southern states and more, you know, North Missouri may be a little bit different, but it's going to be one of those fun years that we all love so much around here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be hard because it was a dry summer and very dry fall. You know, and there is some water on the landscape. You know, I hunted early spec. I think I hunted 6 days and I hunted 5 different farms, none of which were mine. So I was in the truck a lot and driving around and seeing different parts of the world and talking to different people and what they're seeing. And it was obviously incredibly dry, to where we've got a lot of catching up to do. And I know this from experience putting water on our farm. You had to go several days even to get the water to quit going, getting sucked up by the ground because it was so dry. I mean, just cutting through water like crazy, which is tough, but, you know, we'll get some big rains. It'll happen. You know, it always does. Just the timing of it is what's going to be hard to predict. And we're definitely playing catch up. So, you know, it could be a little sluggish in a while, for the spots that are dry and I feel for those guys. And that's just not public land. There's private land that doesn't have access to water either. And may have access to water on certain parts of their grounds, but maybe not on their better parts. Those are like Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And the flip side of that too, though, and we do it here. We try to kind of meter our water, schedule our water as we go. The flip side is if we do get rain in January and we're able to kind of have these fresh food sources in different places, some of these people that don't have access to water early could have some really good duck hunting late. Now we need birds in the landscape. We need birds in Arkansas for them to be able to spread out and go to those new food sources. But there is some upside to, you know, to some dry early in the year. To me, a downside would be a massive 4-inch rain right now or even bigger that's going to put water over the entire landscape at once. That typically spreads ducks out really thin. Yeah, you can find them in spots, but it's, to me, that's worse than a dry situation. Now, luckily, we got 4 inches here. Was that 2 weeks ago or so? Mm-hmm. I think 2 inches of it soaked up immediately. And then where we did get some water in the coming days, most of it soaked in as well. But the Cache River bounced out a little bit, got to 10 foot or so. So there's some water on the landscape. It wouldn't take a lot now to kind of put a little more out. There's another chance of rain coming in next Monday. My forecast keeps going back and forth. I think it's under an inch now. It was up close to 2 inches a day or so ago. So we'll see what the water looks like through the year. On the duck numbers side, I'm not very optimistic. We know May ponds, we know the bee pop, we've talked about all that. I just don't expect to see this, you know, massive fall flight like we saw in 2013 or in 2000. It's just, those numbers aren't there. It's not going to happen. Now, that doesn't mean we'll have a bad season. You could time around, we could get some fronts that come in just right and make birds want to move and feed, and we could end up having a great year. I don't see a lot of stuff lining up on the front end to indicate that it's absolutely going to be a barn burner.
Yeah, that's going to be tough, given where we're relying on a bumper crop of new ducks that hasn't happened in 4 or 5 years now, just because of the conditions on the Prairie Pothole region. So, yeah, to have this expectation that, man, it's going to be waves and waves of ducks like we should be seeing, that's just not in the cards. And I don't think either one of us are saying that to be a Debbie Downer by any means. It's just the reality of it. Now, that doesn't mean, like I said, there can't be really good hunts in there. But, you know, to have beginning to end success, like we all dream about, you know, the conditions just don't line up for that. And we're going to have to be patient until Mother Nature decides to get it right, on the breeding grounds. And in between that time, we're just going to have to scratch and claw like we've been doing and make the best of the opportunities when they're here, when we do get the right weather, when there has been a push of ducks, when they do find fresh food. Because I agree with you on the water level deal. It's, you know, being able to stagger what's flooded and what isn't is big. You know, waste grain rots and gets picked over by geese, all kinds of things happen to it. And to be able to put fresh food on ground that hasn't been used or exposed, the ducks figure that out pretty fast, and you'll see them hammer it. That's why you always see them all fanned out in sheet water that runs out into, you know, non-precision level fields. It's because they're finding that fresh stuff. So, you know, you guys who don't have water at the beginning, just hang tight. It'll happen. And your success may be better in December, early January than what we saw here to start the season.
Yeah. Well, I'm over there experiencing the grind, so to speak. Yeah. Somebody else may be living their heyday. So I think that's important to remember. And this is not to sound like a Debbie Downer about the whole year. I think having realistic expectations kind of helps me have a more enjoyable season. But we've got to remember, too, that it's all going to run together in the long run. Like I said, most of the memories I have aren't from the amazing hunts that I have or haven't had over the years. It's the stuff that's happened on the sidelines. So, and then the older I get, the more I realize it's more about the experience than just the hunt.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that's the outlook that allows you to keep your sanity through the season. Cause man, there are some tough days and that's just going to happen, but it doesn't make me want to give it up or stop going. That's for sure. And it doesn't make me feel like I got to go someplace else to hunt them. You know, I talked to a guy we had on a few weeks ago, Drew Palmer, who hunts there in Kansas, and he's been their season's open and he's been focused on deer because they're not seeing the duck numbers like they typically would this time of year. So things might be delayed a little bit. You know, we're not, I've talked to several camps in my area, which is I'm just north of by me to the wildlife management area, just a couple miles north of Halliwell Reservoir, and you know, several notable clubs. You got all the clubs along by me to the private parts of by me to and Big Ditch and all that, and I'm not hearing they've got a lot of ducks, and if they do, they're not big ducks. They're not, you know, you're not seeing a lot of mallards, not seeing you know, some of the other species we like to hunt in Arkansas. There's some teal around, there's some gadwalls around, but you know, it may be a little sluggish this first weekend, but that's okay. You know, they'll get here, and the numbers that we're going to see, or that's just what we're going to see. But I think you're right. To be able to set those expectations correctly gives you a more realistic outlook on things and probably keep you from wanting to pull your hair out, you know, just during this first split and being so frustrated with it, you can't see straight.
Yeah. Well, just remember not to believe everything you see on Instagram too. So
also true. Also true.
I think that causes people a lot of heartache and frustration when they start scrolling through their feed. Oh, look what so-and-so did. Go and enjoy yourself. Don't worry about everything
else. Right. That's right. That's the We keep saying this, but that's a whole other topic, because whether somebody don't always believe that the picture you see posted is posted from the day that hunt actually took place. I can attest to that happening more times than you would believe. Just for somebody to be able to say they killed him this day, and when they know everybody else didn't, and that makes them some kind of mystical wizard of waterfowling.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'll talk about something I am excited about. This is total change here. I don't know if y'all can hear him running around in the background, but he's making a lot of noise here. But I just picked up my little 9-month-old pup from our buddy Adam Campbell last week. So anxious to see how a little 9-month-old dog does as a duck dog, but he's going to get thrown into the fire Saturday morning. So fingers crossed that it goes more good than bad.
Yeah, I did that. My dog just turned 3, but I took him. He was 11 months when the season started, and I took him, and we had some hiccups. But I'll tell you this: after Christmas, I was like, this dog gets it. I mean, he wasn't perfect, but he gets it, and and we got some spots on our farm that are hard to hunt. They're moist soil units that grown up and smart weed and. You know, wild rice, and there's millet. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in there. Coffee beans. It's tough. You can't, you think about knocking down a duck in the woods. You know, most of the time that dog sees the dog, sees a big splash.
Right.
Sees it fluttering on the water. Young dog, boom, on it. Not too far away.
No,
not in a rice field.
Oh, yeah. They disappear.
But by the back half, so I hope you have the same circumstances, and because by the back half he was on it, and now he's really connecting the dots, and he's not to his prime yet, but excited going into the season with him.
Yeah, I talked to Adam about it when I picked him up. I've hunted with a young dog before. This situation, I had an older dog that had to rehome because he just flat out was not working out. So we knew. Really had on the timeline side of things, I'm back against the wall as far as finding a dog. But I've hunted with young dogs before, and I think if it goes well, it really, really lays a great foundation for a dog. It seems to click, you know, for the ones that can do it, it seems to click early, and then you really can build on. And some of the best dogs I've ever had started off, you know, around that before a year, younger than a year when they first started hunting. Now, most of them, you know, went several times, not every time, but he'll go every time I guide this year. So I may make a bunch of steps, but I think that's kind of the key too, is, you know, let him pick up what he sees. Don't try to force him to do something he's not capable of. Don't ruin it for him. You know, be patient with him. I say him, you may have a female that's young, but be patient with your dog if they're young, and make it fun, make it educational, but don't demand too much of them. So I'm excited to get him out in the field.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet. That's another you know, rewarding experience out of all this. And not everybody has dogs and or wants a dog. But man, when they start doing it right, it becomes such a necessary tool. Man, it's awesome to see. And it's kind of the same with kids. And your kids are a lot younger than mine. And mine are, you know, I'm not giving them much instruction anymore, except when they do something really knuckleheaded related to chasing ducks, but which still happens. But I'm sure you're excited to get your boys, you know, another year older, because mine are at the age, you know, every season, as far as their maturity in the sport is kind of the same, because they're in their 20s. But yeah, I can remember when they were young boys like yours are. You know, every year you were adding something a little bit more. Maybe it was going from one shell to three shells. Maybe letting them call a little bit. You know, actually getting out there and throwing out decoys. You know, doing all those kind of little things, those little stair steps that build you into a real duck hunter, versus just showing up and go sit in your spot in the blind and we'll do all the stuff. And I think that getting boys and girls too. I know plenty of little girls that hunt. Start getting them involved in the whole picture, all the things that have to happen to pull off a duck hunt. Man, you see the same thing you see in a puppy. You know, they start connecting the dots, and then that's when they fall in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's So my boys are 10, 8, and 5. So the big goal over this Thanksgiving stretch here is to get my 5-year-old on a duck. I want him to shoot his first duck. The other two both shot their first duck at age 5. So they're kind of, they're talking a little smack to him to see if he can do it this year. But I think we'll lay it out here pretty quick and get that monkey off our back. But yeah, man, I took him spec hunting the other day. I had a blast hunting with them, just me and them. And the older two, man, they're getting stuff off the ranger. They're helping set up. We get done and I was like, all right, y'all stay here. I'll run, grab the ranger. And I came back and they had all of our decoys picked up and ready to go back on the ranger. I was like, wow, where did you guys learn to clean up? And tell your mom she's going to expect it from now on.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, that stuff's fun. And I mean, to me, that's more enjoyable than the hunt itself. The hunt's great. I love killing birds, but watching, I don't know. I find so much enjoyment in all the things that just come along with a hunt. So that's what I'm looking forward to this year. All those memories and all those times, and hopefully shoot some ducks along the way too.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Well, that's the end goal. I just got a lot of hurdles to get to it, but man, when it goes right, that's why we fall in love with this sport and spend so much time talking, thinking, dreaming about it.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if it weren't for actually killing ducks, we wouldn't do it. So, I mean, I love all the things that come along with it, but killing is we need to do it some, otherwise it wouldn't be much of a sport.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Just doesn't need to be your sole focus, I guess. Or it's not mine anyway.
No. And you know, we've alluded to the 6 or 7 stages of hunter, and there were definitely days that was all I was thinking about. But you know, as you get older and do it more, you start understanding more about just all the different pieces that go into this, this particular animal, the habitat that they require. Then you start, you know, your mind wanders into all those buckets versus just the killing bucket. And it's a whole lot more wholesome experience to me, at this point in my life, that I have that understanding. But I will say this, I think having all that understanding helps me have more success, you know, more often than not, by knowing all that. You know, when I was younger, right, it was just, you know, you just kind of showed up and ducks are going to be there. And it just, it's changed. It's changed over time. We talk about it all the time. Everybody talks about it all the time. But I think having this more holistic understanding of waterfowl and habitat and shotgun shells and decoy, I mean, all of it. You think about all the pieces that make this sport up. Having a better understanding of all these things and why something works and why something doesn't work related to any of them. That's what makes those good days so much more satisfying than maybe when I was a kid, when, you know, people like to refer to the good old days of the, you know, some of those 80s, 90s when it was right. I mean, there were some, obviously some 80s and 90s that were awful because that was the last of the 30 day seasons. But but back then it didn't seem awful to me. We still had good hunts. Now, you know, the limits were smaller and the number of days were smaller, but I don't remember it just being awful. You know, there probably were days that are awful or we just didn't go. My dad didn't take us, but,
right.
But nowadays, you know, I think to be successful, you gotta grab a hold of some of these things and have a clue about them versus just rolling out there. I'm going to throw some decoys out and there's water in here. So that means I'm entitled to kill them today. And so, that's just not the way it works anymore. And it may never work that way again. It's a different sport now. And I appreciate, understanding more about it, now than I used to.
Yeah. I definitely think it takes more work. Either be it because of modern farming or anything else, you know, you got to scout more, you got to do more work on the land. Just, you got to put a little more in to take out of it. And that could be a little bit of a mindset too. I mean, to quote an often heard phrase, I ain't that mad at him anymore. I think, you know, early on in those early stages, you just want to kill. So you don't ever think about the putting back or the effort that goes into it. You're just there to kind of reap the benefit. And we all go through those stages. So
yeah,
I guess I'm just getting old, you know, the old guy, get off my yard.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's just there's a reason why those stages exist, because they are true, and it happens, I think, to most people.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, we didn't invent that list. I mean, it's not just duck hunting. It applies to turkeys and deer and squirrels and everything else. So that list of stages, and if you've never seen it, Google it and maybe look at it and see where you land on that list now, maybe where you've been, and then maybe you might have an outlook on where you're going. Because I don't know that I ever would have thought when I was in my late teens, early 20s, that I was going to be, I was going to be duck farming in my 40s and 50s, and knowing all the things that, you know, that I've been able to been exposed to and learn. I definitely never dreamed I was going to go to Washington, D.C. on behalf of Arkansas waterfowlers and lobby for conservation efforts with DU.
What, that wasn't on your radar when you were 11?
No, I didn't have that on my checklist. Can't believe it. I don't know why, but
yeah, right.
But you know, you think about all those things, but Google it and go look at that six, or you see some say six stages of the hunter, some say seven stages of the hunter, but Google it, look at it, and see where you land on that thing, and compare it to maybe some of the people you hunt with. And if you're probably in the long run going to gravitate towards people that are in the same stage as you are, because you're going to be in agreement in the blind, mm-hmm. you're going to be in agreement in the off season, you're going to be in agreement about where you should hunt the next day. And we've all seen plenty of duck clubs bust up because of adversarial relationships that happen within the dynamic of the club and the membership.
Yeah.
I bet most times a lot of that. Now, some people are just complete jerks and can't help themselves, and they didn't mix with the crowd. That happens. But oftentimes you're probably going to find yourself at significantly different stages of hunting and what it means to you. And that's where you're going to butt heads. Somebody's going to want to hog a certain spot every day because, you know, they're the killer, or they're going to do whatever. And that's how duck clubs break up. So.
Yeah.
Encourage listeners to go check that out if you've never seen it before, because it's pretty interesting to see where you land on that list.
That'd be a fun one to talk about. Maybe get Jimbo on here and talk about those stages. Maybe during the split, it'd be a fun one to sit down and go through.
Yeah, for sure.
I bet Jim Ronquist has been through a couple of those stages himself. It'd be fun to hear his side of that.
I could guarantee it. It'd be some good stories, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, man, I'm excited. I hope everyone has I hope they have the opener that they desire, whether it's, you know, limits in 20 minutes or just a nice, enjoyable time with their friends, family, whatever is on their radar, whatever their goal is. I hope everyone gets to see that and has a great start to their season. I hope the guys in Missouri have had a great start and it continues to be good for them.
Yep, exactly. That's what the outlook should be for this weekend. You build the ducks on top of all that. And if you do, then you got a banner season, regardless if you broke a club record on numbers or not. Try to create those good experiences and have those fun times afield at camp, eat well, drink well, laugh well, all that, and make the best of the season that you can, given the circumstances. Because a lot of it, as we talk about all the time, is out of our control. And so, control the controllables and create that experience the best you can. That's guidance from both of us and the kind of the way we look at things. And we tend to be not perpetually sour, so maybe it works.
Yep, maybe. Hopefully, anyway.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, I think that kind of wraps this one up, man. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Hope everyone has a great opener. Keep following along, make some more suggestions. We're getting some good suggestions coming in on episodes, so we're going to get to those in the future. Appreciate all that. Keep those suggestions coming. Check us out online at thestandardsportsman.com, on social media, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
The Standard Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors.
Sitka Gear, turning clothing into gear. No name is more synonymous with waterproof clothing than Gore-Tex. And over the last 50 years, Gore-Tex has changed how we look at waterproof clothing. Waders have come a long way since I borrowed a pair of felt-sole Converse from my mother to go on my first hunt in the woods. The Delta waders from Sitka Gear have made disposable waders a thing of the past. From their Gore-Tex lining to the breathable fabric to even the boots on them, I can stay comfortable day in and day out in the field. From high-performance base layers to windproof, waterproof outer layers, Sitka Gear has you covered.
Gunner, the team that brought you the world's best dog kennel, recently released a training bumper designed to better assist working dogs and their owners throughout the field and training obedience process. The Gunner bumper has a taper, vented design to promote proper holding and maximum breathability. It also has an adjustable, removable rope with two grip and carry positions. And because they crafted this with a proprietary rubber compound, it's sure to be a durable and reliable tool. Maybe the thing that sets it apart the most, though, is the removable cap that allows you to utilize an interior cavity for wings, feathers, and any other scent training necessity. Most of the product reviews reference that, including this 5-star review from Mark. I absolutely love my new bumpers. The ability to scent train with ease is saving me on live, frozen birds, let alone the ease and convenience of using the bumper versus a thawed bird. Now I simply take a piece of the wing and slide it into the bumper. Historically, I went through a bird every couple of days. Now one teal has lasted me 2 weeks. They're extremely versatile and, like everything Gunner, extraordinarily well designed and constructed.